This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And a good evening to you for Wednesday, February 15th, 2012. My name is Doug Kelly, and I'm here with Vicki Hunter, Dr.
Good evening. Good evening, good evening, and belated birthday greetings, Doug, before we get started.
Well,
I hope you had a great day.
Oh, I did. Yeah, we did a world tour that
good.
Day and saw all the sights in the world.
Awesome.
Yeah.
A little astral projection, did we?
I'm not going into that.
We
no,
had
I
a
don't
nice
do drugs.
Dinner. You and Tracy went
yeah,
out for
we
a
had
nice dinner.
Yeah, we had a nice dinner. So.
Awesome. Good for you. Good for
yep.
you. Welcome, everybody.
Yeah,
welcome
glad to have everybody here.
People.
Yeah.
Good.
Welcome to all those who are listening live to the program and as well as those listening to the archives. Glad to have you, too. Metaphysical Universe is a educational program of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. We explore science, spirituality. We empower the human spirit. We talk about topics of interest to consciousness and existence, which is a wide variety of topics. So tonight we're going to be talking about sacred obligations, what they are, and how they come play a part in our life, or should play a part in our life. If you have a comment or a question, you can certainly ask it in the chat room if you're listening live. Or if you'd like to call in, you can do that. The numbers are on your screen. Reverend John Hightower will be screening your calls as usual. So that's the intro. Now what do we talk about?
Well... I'd like to talk more about your birthday, but, you know, I guess we're going to leap forward to supreme sacred obligations. Actually, this is a very serious topic, everybody. You know, we do like to add in humor, keep it comfortable, because we like to keep everything we talk about grounded and sensibly applicable to daily life. And that's, we're just being ourselves and, you know, just trying to find some humor, too, so... Do no harm, do right.
Yep.
That's number one.
Yep, that's actually what I am calling the supreme sacred obligation. Let's talk about what sacred obligations are. I mean, if you think about it, an obligation is just that. It's something that we feel compelled to do. A sacred obligation, well, that implies... you know, something important, something spiritual, something, on a higher level. And so there's several sacred obligations we're going to talk about, which are based on the principles of belief in of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science and also the life leadership paragon. But the first and foremost, the cardinal, if you will, sacred obligation is do no harm and do right. And you probably hear do no harm a lot. I mean, it's been around for, gosh, ever. And I mean forever. But if we think about do no harm, I mean, it's a great core value. It's a great principle. But it's not quite enough. We also need to do right. And so if you use those two together, if you feel... an obligation to doing that because of who you are and your level of enlightenment and awareness and so forth, it's going to do well. And it's going to do well for you. It's going to serve you well. It's going to serve humanity well.
You know, Doug, I think, some people may not understand the true concept of do no harm. And I have this discussion with people very often because to enforce boundaries to kids, for instance, that's not doing harm. Although some people think they're too tough or they're, you know, they don't like their methods or something that they think is harmful. What we're talking about in the do no harm, I think, is that integral, internal knowing of what brings harm to yourself and what brings harm to others. But don't you think, Doug, that maybe it's more about what we can each live with in ourselves, in our conscience?
Well, it is. It's all about integrity. It's all about higher awareness. It's all about higher core values when you do no harm. And that's a general thing. Do no harm. Don't harm anyone or anything. Do no harm. And of course, as you mentioned, that includes you and so many people who are good people in the world and generally do no harm to others. They still end up harming themselves in a matter of speaking. For example, there's a lot of ways we can do ourselves a disservice, aka harm. One of those is to not have a healthy self-esteem, to think you're not worthy, to think you're not good enough, to think you're not perfect. Those are essentially ways of harming you. You know, you need to understand that you are enough. You have everything that you need within you. You are perfect just the way you are, and you'll be perfect tomorrow. You'll be more aware, and you'll be more experienced and more knowledgeable. Those are all good things.
But even the flaws are perfect.
That's exactly right, because it's who you are at this moment. You know, I'm not today who I was yesterday, not 100%, right? Hopefully, we're all evolving little by little, bit by bit. We're growing. We come to certain realizations. We have certain epiphanies as life goes on. And so that's the whole point. You know, I talked about perfection in past episodes. I've been talking about it for, gosh, 10 years. You know, are you perfect? And most people will say no. And I say, why not? They say, well, nobody's perfect. And I say, well, I'm perfect. How come you're not? And they look at me cross-eyed and think I'm crazy. And I hold them to it. Why aren't you perfect? You said you're not perfect. Fair enough. Why aren't you? Well, I make mistakes. Oh, really? Well, interesting thing about mistakes, isn't it? You know,
they're perfect.
Mistakes are an inherent part of the human species. You cannot remove mistakes from the human, otherwise you would not have a human. It's who we are, what we do, it's how we learn, it's how we grow. And the only mistake in a mistake is not learning the lesson and becoming better as a result of it. You can't go to college and major in experience, right? You can't get a degree in experience. You've got to live it. You have to experience experience.
Now, there's a great question in the chat. What if the negative beliefs are subconscious, base-level beliefs that can't easily be accessed?
Well, there are ways to access those. Hypnosis is one of them. Meditation is another one. Same thing, only different.
Watching patterns?
Yeah.
Patterns of behavior?
You know, not accepting that inner dialogue. When you catch yourself putting yourself down, you need to say cancel, and replace it with something positive. I talk about this in the IMHS degree program. I call it the thought bank, you know, the first national bank of your name thought. You know, if you have a negative thought, it's like you're making a withdrawal from your thought bank. And so if you make a withdrawal and you make too many withdrawals from your thought bank or any bank, you're going to get overdrawn, aren't you? So if you make an agreement with yourself, form an agreement. If you have a negative thought, it's like withdrawing from your bank, your thought bank. Why not make a deposit of two positive thoughts? And if you get in the habit of that, of catching yourself, and you will pretty quickly get in the habit of saying, you know, that's not entirely true. You know, look, I do the best I can with what I know, the tools that I have, the experience that I have at this moment. I can do nothing else. I can only do as good as I know how to do at this very moment. Tomorrow will be better. And
I think that we also have to consider that at the moment of realization that there's something in yourself you want to change is if you must feel embarrassment for what you've done in the past, if you must feel shame, if you must feel like, ooh, an ego bruise, just put a timer on and give yourself 10 minutes
yeah.
And then move forward. Because it's, I think what you're saying, Doug, and what we all like really like to believe is that we all do it. You know, we're human.
Yeah.
We all do it. We all have stuff that, you know, we got our banks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's stuff coming out and what's going in, and you know, it's we have to, like, we're all in this together. We're all doing the same thing. And I think when we separate ourselves or we think that we're alone, you know, alone on the planet and nobody thinks like me, I think that's when we really get into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you?
Absolutely, because everybody thinks like everybody else. They just don't want to admit it. We all have moments of uncertainty. We all have moments where we don't feel as confident as we'd like to. We all feel moments where we feel scared. You know, I talk about this too in various seminars have for years. You know, think about you as a human being. Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. Sometimes you feel ecstatic, other times you feel sad. Sometimes you feel like you just can't lose, and other times you've got tears streaming down your face, you're cut to the heart over some matter, and you don't know what to do. You know, you're human. That's life. And you embrace it.
Hopefully, if we can get to the point where we just have like 5 bad minutes a week, you know, instead of 5 good minutes, I think if maybe we can all learn to take inventory, and I make a practice of this, I take an inventory, and trying to get to the root of whatever it is that, well, would I feel this way if, or would I feel that way if this, if would I feel that way if that, and, you know, I get to the nail of it kind of thing, and then say, okay, and then I go with it for a few minutes, and it does move, the energy moves, the feelings move, but not to stay in them. So it's, if you can work to a goal of, you know, if I'm going to have 5 bad minutes, it's going to be 5 bad minutes a week, not 5 bad minutes every hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so setting goals, I think, like that also helps, that it's the constant challenge of the self about what kind of human being you want to recreate yourself into. Today is perfect. This moment is perfect. It's brought us to where we are.
Mm-hmm.
But we do want to change. That's the whole point of being human. So I think this is all part of that. When you talk about do no harm, it's do no harm to the self that perpetuates things that are negative to ourselves.
Well, and we can actually, what we're going to do is we're going to thread the supreme cardinal sacred obligation, do no harm, do right. We're going to kind of thread that through the entire discussion. So let's segue into some other sacred obligations comprised within the life leadership paragon. And just to remind listeners what that is, it's a model for successful living. It includes 3 traits that combine to create a fourth. It is something that we all have to have. It's at these skills, these traits are absolutely necessary to be successful in literally anything in life, anything at all, business, relationships, school, whatever it is. And those 3 skills are self-acceptance, self-responsibility, respect for free will, and then these 3 synergistically create self-completeness. Now, I want to segue into self-acceptance. We've kind of been talking about that as part of this, accepting yourself unconditionally. It means that you don't feel like you're any better than anyone else, but no worse than anyone else. That you're entitled to the same good things in life as anyone else, no more, no less. That you are perfect just the way you are, and you're getting better every day. You're a perfect work in progress. This is all about self-acceptance. And I want to go back to the question about negative beliefs in the subconscious. They're not easily accessed, but if you think about your unconscious mind and your conscious mind, it's almost like a ship. Your conscious mind is like the captain of the ship. The unconscious mind, many people call that the subconscious, the unconscious mind is like the engineer down in the engine room. And so the captain, the conscious mind, will call down to the engine room, the unconscious, and say, okay, I'll full speed ahead. Well, think about it. The engineer down in the engine room, they can't see. They don't know whether you're headed for land, you know, headed for a big rock. They don't know that. They just follow the instructions of the captain. Well, in the same way with the mind, your conscious mind instructs your subconscious mind or your unconscious mind. If your self-talk is constantly negative, your unconscious mind, like that engineer down in the engine room, said, oh, okay, you're not worthy. You don't deserve this. Okay, I get it. And then your mind, your unconscious mind, brings reality into line with what that message is. It makes it happen. But if you're feeding the good stuff to your unconscious mind, if you replace those negative thoughts with positive thoughts, negative self-talk with positive self-talk. And it takes deliberate effort. It's not always easy. Good affirmations will do that. Don't forget the thought bank. If you catch yourself saying something negative, replace it with two positive thoughts. And get in the habit of doing that. And don't allow yourself to put yourself down. I love the expression. I don't know who originally said it, but essentially, the quote or the sage or the wisdom is, nobody is more worthy of our best behavior than us. So nobody is more worthy of your best behavior than you. If you wouldn't say those things to your closest loved one, don't say them to you. Don't say them to yourself. Accept yourself just as you are, right here, right now, understanding that you are a human being and you're doing the best you can with what you know, with the experience that you have, the tools that you have at the moment. Now, that's not a cop-out by any stretch, because it goes with the given that we're trying to improve every day. We've got to grow. And so I hope that helps a little bit with that question.
And everyone has the responsibility unto themselves. It is my responsibility to me to accept myself and think. You know, it's like think. And it's a tough one for people, I think. Yeah, there I go again, mm-hmm. I think.
You're thinking again.
There I go. It's to be conscious of what we're thinking about. Like if you ask someone, what were you thinking about just now? Oh, I don't know. You see, it's that self-awareness. And you know that it's a very cliche kind of term about being enlightened, I think, or to be of a conscious mind. But I really believe that's all it is to be aware of what we're thinking and be the manager of our own thoughts. Like we manage our own minds.
Absolutely.
So, and we're responsible for that.
Mm-hmm. And even the suggestion in the chat room, be aware, accept, allow, then release. And that's another thought that I had that I'm glad they've written that, because, and Vicki, you kind of talked about it too. It's like grief, you know. We have things in life that happen that bring us grief. We lose a loved one, a pet, and so we have this grief. And depending on the relationship, that grief can last for some time. Well, it's the same with, you know, you make a mistake, you feel embarrassed, you feel like an idiot, whatever it is, you know. Allow yourself to feel that for 10 minutes. Allow yourself to feel it for all it's worth. If you got to cry, then you cry. You feel it. You touch it. You hold it. You caress it. You experience it. And then you release it. And if you do that, it might come back again, but it will be less intensive. Because when you touch those issues, and I'm talking about in a consciousness type of way, when you metaphorically touch them, it depletes their energy. And so every time that you touch them, more energy is depleted, and pretty soon they fade because, you know, the old adage, you know, time heals all wounds, or time wounds all heals, depending on how you look at it. So that's some good ways to look about it. I'm just looking over the chat room to see if there's anything else here. Okay,
nope,
so
I think we've got it pretty much covered thus far. Just I can't stress enough about the importance of releasing. And sometimes it's as simple as letting it move. If you can let that pain of any kind, if you can let pain move, then you're the manager of it. Sometimes, you know, when we get this kind of idea, when we release, you know, pain or sadness, you know, we release it, it's like evaporated. And that's not necessarily the case. It moves. You know, you'll be less sad about it later. Now, not all grief acts like that. Some grief, it's paralyzing, quite mm-hmm. paralyzing. But to let it move. So that, you know, that's why I think the timer is such a blessing. It has been for me mm-hmm. and people I've worked with. Okay, 10 minutes, go there. Now, let's move the feelings. Let's move the thoughts. Just the mere fact that you've looked at a timer has moved thought. It's moved the energy.
Right.
Anything that can help somebody move the energy, even if it takes a little longer to release, I think is really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are the things about being human. We're human. It happens.
And it's a beautiful thing. Now, there's a question. Would you say that grief is not necessarily a negative emotion, but a human emotion of sadness? Absolutely. You know, you look at the human experience, and some people, I mean, there are some things that are negative, like guilt. It's pointless, wasted emotion. But there are other things like grief. I mean, that's a process. It's how we deal with unfortunate things and losses, significant losses. It's part of the human condition. And it's like mistakes, you know. Embrace your humanness. You know, when you make a mistake, it should never be a point when you denigrate yourself. It should never be something that you put yourself down for. Even if it's a stupid mistake, there was a reason why it was made. And that reason is very simply, the lesson wasn't learned. Okay, fine, sue me. I'll learn it. And sometimes we do need repeat performances to learn that lesson. But the beautiful thing is when we learn that lesson, make amends if necessary, make the changes, move forward guilt-free, move forward a better, more experienced person. Remember, you can't buy experience. You have to experience. So,
and that is a perfect human being.
Yeah, absolutely perfect. And so we're talking about sacred obligations. We've mentioned the supreme cardinal sacred obligations, do no harm, do right. We've now segueing into some other sacred obligations. And the next one, of course, we just talked about was self-acceptance. You need to accept yourself for who you are right here, right now, always trying to improve and evolve. The next one is that of self-responsibility, and we can probably best summarize that with the three universal laws of responsibility. The first one is, you are where you are because of your choices and decisions in life. Now, sometimes that can be a little hard to stomach.
I got a few stories.
It can be a little hard, you know, and we think about decisions and choices we made in the past, perhaps with a relationship that went bad or went toxic, and think, well, you know, I didn't mean to make that. It wasn't my intention to make that wrong choice. But you see, that was due to our own inexperience at the time. There might have been red flags, but we couldn't see them because we were inexperienced. Now we know better.
So that could be part of that unconscious belief system that was mentioned earlier that came up in the chat room, because it's an unconscious thing, and you're... It's like the engine room is firing off the controls for a minute.
Right, they're doing their own thing. But see, it's also because of what we've allowed to go into our unconscious minds, those messages from the captain down in the engineer. We may not have intended them to be that way, but how many times have we tried to have a conversation, especially with somebody who may not quite speak our own language very well, there can be misunderstandings. There can be misunderstandings when two people speak the same language perfectly. So we have to be careful of the message we send to us, and the choices that we've made in life have put us where we are right here, right now. If you want a different life, make different decisions, make different choices. If you don't want to make a choice, no problem. A choice will be made for you by default.
And, you know, it's okay to laugh at yourself for being stupid. this is my way out, you know. This is how I take the high road. What was I thinking? Oh, well, I wasn't.
Yeah.
You know.
And
that was just a dumb choice. I mean, what on earth could I have been thinking? You know, where was I when that happened?
And sometimes we just don't think, you know, but we might have other things on our minds. Yeah, it's part of the human condition. So, you know, and this also highlights another, what I could also offer as a sacred obligation. Don't take yourself too seriously. Don't take life too seriously. And I'll be the first to admit that I have to work on this constantly. I have most of my life. I have to remind myself, and I don't do it enough, to not take myself too seriously, not take life too seriously, because life is not about me and it's not about you. It's about us.
doesn't overachieving kind of go into that too? If we're overachievers,
mm-hmm.
That's when we take things very seriously. I'm the first to say that. You know, I take life seriously because I want to do it really well. And then when I don't, so I've had to learn the humor of that and understanding my humanity is just, oh, gee, the first day I realized that I was just human, oh, man, I was so choked, you know. So, I mean, don't you think, Doug, really, you know.
Well, yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on that. It's probably off topic, but, you know, there's a question in the chat room, and I don't know if you want to tackle it. If you don't, I will. The question is, what role does soul fragmentation play in keeping our sacred obligations? Any thoughts?
Well, you know, it depends on what your definition of soul fragmentation is. And I'm being sincere, because there's, a lot of different ideas about that. I don't know. I think every soul, most souls, come in with the greatest amount of potential. And I think it's the soul that's in love with potential. We fall in love with our soul's energy. If things are fragmented, I would tend to say majority of the time it's a mental fragmentation or an emotional fragmentation or an arrested development somehow. So I have a difficult time talking about soul fragmentation because it's such a rare thing. My understanding of soul fragments, it's a very rare thing. It's like when somebody's really not home.
Well, let me spin it a different way. You know, when we think about fragmentation, let's talk about our own psychology. You know, cognitive dissonance, which means when you hold two conflicting beliefs. And this is common. I mean, there's cognitive dissonance all over the place. A lot of religious people have it. They feel compelled to follow their religious tenets, but there's something inside that says it's not quite right. So one part of them wants to follow the tenets. The other part of them doesn't. And so they have this inner battle, this inner war, this inner struggle. And you could call that fragmentation. A part of them wants to do this, another part of them wants to do that, maybe another part of them wants to do something else. And so you have to, this goes back to self-acceptance. You have to accept yourself for who you are. You have to be a real, live human being. If it doesn't feel right, you don't do it. And that's why we have to look at our own belief system. I had to do this. I've been through this. Folks, I'm speaking from experience. I went through the very same fragmentation, if you will, cognitive dissonance, dissimilar beliefs being held at the same time. And it was killing me. It took enormous emotional resources to make that happen, to live with that, until I just couldn't do it anymore. And that was, 13 years ago, about 40. And I had to just say, look, I'm done with this. The whole perfect thing, where my whole approach to perfection came as a result of this epiphany, this realization, this heightened awareness. Look, I'm done trying to be perfect for some mythical, supernatural friend in the sky. You want me to be perfect? Not a problem. Make me perfect. But until then, don't bitch at me for not being perfect. And, you know, if the language is not good, I apologize, but that's
hallelujah.
I don't usually say that stuff, but that's the point. You want me to be perfect? Well, I'm doing the best I can, and I'm trying in all good faith, in all honesty, with all good intent, but I'm not going to play this game anymore. I am perfect the way I am, and I'm getting better every day. And so we have to discard the parts of us that are not in line with who we truly are as human beings. So I hope that can help a little bit. So
yeah, for me that makes complete sense. I hope that answered, you know, for our, you know, sure, our chat room. So if I can just say, a fragmented soul is very often something that is split in the soul energy. But I'm saying that I think that that's usually when somebody's not entirely in their own body. You know, it's like you have to really be grounded, really get into that sense of knowing who you are, and then there isn't that soul fragmentation. So I do appreciate the question, though. It's a good question. It's mm-hmm. a good topic.
All right, so that's we're talking about self-responsibility. Let's go on to another aspect of this sacred obligation. The first one of the first of the three universal laws of responsibility we just talked about. You are where you are because of your choices and decisions. The second one is don't expect others to do for you that which you can do for yourself. This is selfish. You see this all over the place. You know, honey, go do this for me. Honey, go do that for me. Or I want you to do this. People are asking to do things that they really ought to be doing for themselves. I'm not going to belabor this one, but if it's your job to do it, then do it. And don't try to get other people to do your stuff.
Don't you think, though, that this is very often when people have that unconscious want of being taken care of?
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Well, or laziness, you know, it could be that, too. If it's your
stuff,
do it.
Sure. Emotional protection, they want to feel loved, they want to feel for others, but that's, again, you're not loving yourself if you expect others to love you before you do yourself. So,
and yet others could use it as a scapegoat. Well, I didn't do it, they did it, you know, so they can skirt responsibility. Now, the third of the three universal laws of responsibility is perhaps one of the most important.
Listen up, people, this is a big one.
Yeah,
big one.
Huge one, and it is a sacred obligation in and of itself. Don't do for others that which they can and should do for themselves. This is my definition of codependence. Think about codependent people. Great people, strong people, man, they carry the weight of the world on their shoulders. They are kind people, kind-hearted people, and they will often do a lot for others. To an unhealthy degree. So here's the wisdom of this. Don't do things for other people that they could and should do for themselves. Now, that needs some clarification. Does this mean that you can't help your neighbor when they're down and out? No. Does it mean you can't help somebody when they need it? No, it doesn't mean that. What it means is if a person can do it and they should do it, then don't you do it. Because if you do, you're enabling them. If, let's take an example. Let's say you got a neighbor who is an addict and they keep losing one job after another because of their problem, their addiction. And they ended up losing their license, their driver's license, and they can't drive because of it. Well, now they want you to take them to a job interview. But you've got some history with this person. You've already taken them to job interviews before, and they just end up losing the job. Now, can they drive themselves to this job interview? No. Should they drive themselves to this job interview? Yes. But they can't. Can you go ahead and do it? Well, think about it. If you do, you're essentially enabling them to continue in an unhealthy routine. Now, if they... There can be other examples. Let's say that a person, due to no fault of their own, got downsized from a job, and they're trying their best, and they ended up having their car repossessed, and they need your help to drive them to a job interview. They should do it themselves, but they can't do it themselves. Now, is it okay? Sure, because you're not enabling them to continue in an unhealthy pattern. So... This third one, don't do things for the people they could and should do for themselves.
You know, if I can just add in here something that in some of the family work that I do, people are surprised to hear that I raised my children in a way that if your mind can think it and your body can do it, you will. Mm-hmm. And my kids made their own lunches when they were 6 years old going to school. Now, I oversaw it. I had everything available for them. I made sure that they had their little bag or their lunchbox when they went out the door. But their brain can think about it. Their bodies can do it. So do it.
Mm-hmm.
and maybe that's a hard way of some people, again, think that, you know, that's harmful to not do that, but we're back to that what is do no harm. You know, my idea is that I am encouraging them in self-acceptance, self-responsibility, you know, and all the things that we're talking about tonight from a very young age. And how many of us have been at some point either denied the opportunities to be self-functioning. You know, I learned at a very young age in my family. However, I see a lot of people taking charge of other people's lives in very many ways, right, even with children. So I think that this starts, if people, those who have children, think about it for a moment, about what a service you're doing to another human being to encourage them in their capabilities. I mean, how extraordinary is that to be supportive of other people's capabilities?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we turn it around.
And speaking of children, too, there's a question, how can we encourage them, children, that is, to do it for themselves, such as a child in school who insists on help but actually wants the answers? Now, I'm going to be the first to tell you, too, we just talked about don't do things for the people they could and should do for themselves. And that applies with certainly across the board with adults. Now, your children, I'm going to tell you, it's a little bit of a different story on that. That one's going to take some effort. That one's that's a hit and miss thing. Look, it's not easy raising children. It's not. And there are times when you will talk to you, you're blue in the face to do this, to do that, clean up your room, do this, do your homework. And, you know, look, if you're raising children, you know what I'm talking about. What you want to do is you need to look at the end result. Look at the end goal. When they become adults, you want them to become healthy, mature adults. So it's going to take some give and take as you raise them. Now, for children who wants help, they might just want you, they may want the answers on a silver platter, but that's kind of human nature too. So now you have an opportunity to help them learn a great life lesson that things don't just come on silver platters. There's got to be some investment on your part. So you can help draw them out. You can assist them. You can help them think through it, guide them in that way, and then they come up with the answers. And they feel that they've done something worthwhile, too. Hopefully that helps.
It may be that there's something in the processing
mm-hmm.
that they're afraid to, you know, admit, or they don't even know how to articulate, I can't process this. And that's why they want to skip to the answers. But this is a, as you say, Doug, I mean, this is a process of exploring relationships that teaches the parents more about themselves than they ever do, you know, in what the kids learn. Because you really do have to challenge yourself almost every day to find a new way, or what does this bring out on me, and what did this trigger, and am I seeing the negative? Am I being influenced by other people so that I'm not seeing my child the way I know my child to be, in an honest way, you know, good and bad, and the thing, the weaknesses and the strengths. It is perfect in its design. And it's just the challenge of that. So as much as you can explore with another human being, and I don't care what age they are, ask them how they see it. Ask them what they think about it. Ask them how they are, they smelling it, are they tasting it, are they, you know, access all the senses into the process. And, you know, then you start to get a different kind of reaction and response from them that triggers new emotion, new thinking in the child. They find their own answers. This is a journey, I tell you. I looked at my 20-year-old son years ago and said, didn't I teach you when you were three not to chew with your mouth closed? You know, I mean, the things that we think we teach kids, that we have to go over it and over it and over it, but then they are who they are. They are who they are.
Well, and a lesson in all of this is perhaps another sacred obligation. In all things, be reasonable. Few things in life are black and white. So even as we discuss these sacred obligations, you know, there's always the give and take. There's always the gray areas. You know, you have to use your power of reason and intelligence and arrive at the best approach in harmony with do no harm and do right. So we've talked about self-acceptance, self-responsibility. The next one, sacred obligation, is respect for free will, basically respecting other people. And one of the greatest ways that we can respect other people is contained in what I call the law of control. This is a sacred obligation. Here it is. Do not try to control or change other people. That is perhaps the most violated sacred obligation on this planet. Everybody's trying to control or change somebody else. You know, people get into relationships. Well, I can change him later, or I can change her later. You know, they'll change when they're around me. You know, all that kind of unhealthy thinking. If you want to ruin a relationship, then try to change or control the other person. It's the surest way to completely decimate any relationship. Now, what's the primary way that we attempt to control other people? By giving unsolicited advice. Think about that for a minute. If you're in the habit of telling other people what they ought to be doing when they don't ask for it, you are giving unsolicited advice. I can't stress to you how important it is to not give unsolicited advice to other adults, especially to your partner, spouse, and adult children.
You know, Doug, I'm going to share something that you know about me that the audience does not. I've not mentioned it on air before. I have three children, and my third, my only son, has elected many years ago to become a Christian, a born-again Christian. Now, this in and of itself is his right. When we had a problem is when he tried to change me, telling me I didn't understand. Even when I brought out a big stack of Bibles and I said, which one would you like to read? Now, over the years, it's become very difficult. Now, as a mother, I'll tell you, the umbilical cord, you know, stretches very far and thins. I will always love my son. I will always be there for him. But we can't speak to each other, not because I have a judgment of him and his choices, but because he decided as he grew up that I was wrong. And then, of course, he's got a whole army behind him reinforcing that. And there's certain behaviors that, you know, because I expected my children to be respectful, to stay in touch, he felt that I was expecting too much, and it's because of my philosophies in life, which it is. But he thought that that's because I didn't approve of him being with the church. I am not a Christian. I do not practice a fundamentalist idea or ideology, dogma, or otherwise. I want an open and free mind. And as he journeys through his life, he's entitled to that. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to not want to control things. There's this, you know, for a long time, it took everything I had to hold back, keep my mouth shut, even though I wanted to speak, you know, and not enter the dialogue. I had to keep my conversations based in, you know, back to the do no harm, do right. And very much everything that we've talked about tonight, I have had to check in with myself repeatedly to not infringe on his right to his views about life. Now, it will, we hope, as the years go on, you know, people grow and mature. He's 25 now. And he'll figure himself out. But this is the toughest thing of all. When we love people and we want nothing but the very, very best for them, to let them create themselves into who they wish to be, it is absolute free will.
And that's a great example. And you know, I have grown sons too. You have to respect them. Let them make their own life. And this is a hard thing for a lot of parents to do with their grown children, is to not give them advice unless they ask for it. Now, can you share a concern? Sure. But there's a thin line between that and actually giving unsolicited advice. So you got to be careful. And so that's one of the most important sacred obligations that we can have. Now, there's a question in the chat room. How would you handle a situation that involves a coworker who does not practice these things, such as self-responsibility, respect for free will, not giving unsolicited advice? it's like you handle it with anyone. And you're saying coworker here, so I'm not. I'll explain if it was a manager or a boss, but a coworker. You know, when anybody is offering you unsolicited advice, you got to learn a tactful way to just nip that in the bud. You know what? I appreciate your concern, but I'm going to work this out for myself. Thanks. Something on that order. Now, if it's your boss, you got to remember that justifiably so, bosses are supposed to be, and I'm talking about a boss who's really a leader, is supposed to be training and coaching his or her employees for betterment. And as I've always taught in my leadership classes and courses, you know, if you want better people, better employees, teach them life skills. Teach them how to live better, happier, more successful lives, and you will have better employees. And so as my job as a leader is to train and coach my people, that would involve advice. Now, I can't give them advice on their personal life because that would be crossing a boundary. So that's hopefully an answer to
that.
Well,
if I can take that a step further, Doug, because the second part of the question that just came up in the chat is, but what if they consistently try to jeopardize your own job? Paper trail. You know, whenever there's been a communique of any kind, and now we have emails, of course, if somebody has, if you've done a job, you put it in an email, send it off to confirming what you've done. If there's been a meeting, you later write to them and say, by my understanding of the meeting, and it's to always try to have that paper trail that if anything does come to bite you in the butt, that you have your paper trail. Not only that, if somebody sees that you are, you know, behaving in a way that's proactive, you're not being defensive, you're being proactive to make a good, happy workplace because you know that somebody is there who's, you know, a disturber, then they will back off a bit. They will, you know, they'll realize that they better be smarter than that because there are people who are like that, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. So I've always recommended a paper trail and always make sure that you back up any conversations with an email or a little letter, a memo to say, I understand by our conversation that this is getting done and so on. Unless, of course, you're working with people. I had an occasion many years ago to work next to a fellow who was full-blown white supremacist. Holy cow. Now, I'm smiling, grinning, you know, just trying to figure out where this guy comes from. It's interesting for a minute, but, you know, I finally did just write my superiors a letter to say that I was very concerned with people spreading their own philosophies in the office and their own belief systems that do promote negativity. And actually, without any other warning, he was gone the next day because I didn't know he had been fired or removed from his previous job for exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. And he had been hired to this job conditionally. So you never know what else is going to happen. You know, there's a little, you know, footnote here in the chat room with the one who was asking these questions. She agrees with the paper trail, but this person refuses to write anything and actually threw a piece of paper at me when I asked him to initialize what he said. He doesn't have to initialize anything. You just keep writing it down and never mind.
Yeah, it's documentation, your own personal documentation.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, when you're asking somebody to initialize it, you're actually aggravating them. And that's kind of irritating the situation.
And sometimes you have to get assertive on them, and you have, you know, if you've tried the nice way, look, I appreciate it, I'm going to work this out on my own, thank you very much. If they continue to do it, you have to say, look, with all due respect to you, you are giving me unsolicited advice. It's a matter that is not your concern, a.k.a. it's none of your business. So please, again, with all due respect, just keep your opinions to yourself. If I'm want to seek your advice, then I'll ask you. Now, that's a one nice way, or a very direct way, and you can't say it angrily. You have to just say it calmly. But you can always go to the to your superior and say, look, here's what's going on. This has got to stop. And it's this person's trying to make me look bad. I'm trying to do my best here. What can you do to help? Let's move on because we're running short on time, and I've got a few more that I want to bring out. So we've talked about this law of control. That is, don't try to control or change people or manipulate people. Don't give unsolicited advice. Another big one is paying it forward. This is a sacred obligation, and most people are familiar with this concept, but it's basically doing a nice for somebody else. And the idea is you do a nice for them, they do a nice for somebody else. And if we practice this, you got a whole world of people doing nices for everybody else. It's a great concept. So in your own life, look for ways you can pay it forward. Again, making sure that you're not violating that third universal law, not doing things for people they could and should do for themselves. But it's okay to do a nice. Just make sure that by so doing, you're not enabling unhealthy or self-destructive behavior. Another one, a few more. I'm just going to kind of go through some of these and talk a little bit more about some of them. Don't have a lot of time. Gratitude, being grateful, almost a sacred obligation. Think about it. Being grateful for what you got. A lot of people don't have everything they want, so they focus on what they don't have and not what they do have. They focus on what they don't have and not on what they want. So they end up getting negative. Be grateful for what you got right here and right now. And if you want more, fine. Work toward it, but at least be thankful for what you do have. Another one is honor all life. This is a big one, too. Honor all life. It kind of goes hand in hand with respect for free will, but honor life, including humans, animals, whatever. Honor that life. Don't take advantage of people. Don't be so selfish that you're not concerned about what other people feel, what they're thinking. One of the big ways that people dishonor other people is on the internet when they're hiding behind anonymity on these internet forums. Even Facebook, they can talk big and they can get all, you know, out of control saying mean things when they would never think of doing such a thing face to face. So honor all life. And here's another one that kind of goes hand in hand with paying it forward and with honoring life and with respecting others. And it's one that doesn't get done enough. One of the greatest needs, in my opinion, that humanity has is the need for encouragement. You know, life is not always easy, guys. It's tough. And we all need the good word. We all need a good word of encouragement, that pat on the back now and then. You know, when you look at people, don't be so focused on your own lack or your own poor me or woe is me type of thing. Look at people and let your heart come out and feel the compassion, because I'm here to tell you that people are doing the best they can with what they know, the experience they have, the tools they have at the moment. There are very few people on this planet who lie awake at night scheming against other people. Just doesn't happen. Even those pot stirrers at work or wherever, they don't actively lay awake and just try to, how can I get you? They don't. It's just their own lack of awareness. So if you need a word of encouragement, give a word of encouragement. Give the encouraging word. When somebody has a success, celebrate it with them. You know, celebrate a victory every day anyway, even for yourself, but celebrate a victory with them. Tell them, good for you. You know, somebody gets that one thing that you've always wanted, and you didn't get it, and they did. It's okay. Your time will come. Celebrate that victory with them. Pat them on the back. Good for you. I'm happy for you. Because if you're not, it's just selfish.
You know, I think in part to this is acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. Acknowledgement of people is encouragement, even if it's a little thank you email, you know, a little quick thank you, hey, I was thinking of you kind of thing to someone. It can go a long way for encouragement.
It can. Just, you know, try to have that human compassion, because we're all in this together. I mean, we all woke up one day and said, oh, wow, I'm here. You know, where the heck did I come from? You know, what's going on here?
I mean, where am I?
I'm on a planet where everything eats everything else. I mean, how did I get here? They sent me to the wrong planet. You know, so we're all kind of shell-shocked in a way, in that way, and we're trying to make sense of it. We're trying to make sense of our life. And honestly, the people that are even listening to this program are doing well, because at least they understand that they need to grow. They're seeking personal growth. They're seeking advancement. They're seeking to evolve and to become complete within themselves. And that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Wow, wouldn't it be great if we could just get the world to embrace these things, you know, to do no harm, to do right? If we could just get the world to do that,
you know, Doug,
goodbye wars.
I'm going to inject here. Manisha has said in the chat room, and this need of encouragement is satisfied so well in IMHS that we, the students of IMHS, always try to give our best. Thanks for encouraging all of us to bring out the best in us. Thanks, Doug. You know, I'm going to say that too, Doug. Joining up with IMHS and MCHS is a joy. It truly is, because you are one of the most encouraging human beings I've ever met. And I just want to say that to you.
Thank you.
As well as, you know, Jericho putting up there again the belated birthday greetings. So I'm just going to take advantage of this opportunity and share what people are writing about you, talking about you, and say you set that example. And that's one of your next points, I know, coming up here, setting the example to others, and you do that.
Well, thank you very, very kindly to all of you, to Jericho and Manisha and Vicky. I mean, I really do appreciate it, and I'm glad to hear that. Because that was the next point. What is the example that you show to others? And a sacred obligation is to demonstrate an example to others that they can follow or want to emulate. And you can do that by being a real-life human being. That means being who you are, but in a positive way, growing, looking for the good in others. Look, I'm human too. People drive me nuts too, folks. You know, I'm not this robot. I see the world. There are things that drive me nuts too. But the one thing that always keeps thinking of is, you know what? These people are trying the best they can, and I can't stay thinking they're nuts, you know, or crazy, or being driven crazy for long. Because look, people simply lack awareness. So did I. So do I. I mean, we're all in a various stage of development, right? I mean, we
like
all
the
have
driver
a,
training going to the mall when she's weaving all over
yeah,
the place and
you
she
know,
thought she was drunk.
Yeah, just her mother lacked awareness. This is not where you have your daughter drive the first time around. So anyway, the point is, be an example to others that they want to emulate, that they want to follow. And keep in mind all these different things we've talked about tonight. Gosh, I wish we had more time for this one. I didn't think we'd even need this much time, but
it's a wonderful topic. And you know, I'm so grateful to be a part of this group. And John just said he walks out about every day telling himself that this is the house that MCHS and IMHS built, thanks to Doug Kelly. So there.
Well, thank you, John.
That's it. We're out of time.
Yeah, we're getting low here. So if you want to listen to this archive again, if you're listening to it live, and if you need any to be reminded of them, but remember the supreme cardinal sacred obligation: do no harm, do right. If you just practice that, you will have a much, much better life and healthier relationships. Now, next week we'll have another topic that we'll post on mchschurch.org. If you'd like to learn more about metaphysics, please visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. We have the degree program there. If you're not enrolled, please go take a look. Job is to help you grow, so love to have you. Thanks to John Hightower for screening calls tonight. Thanks, Vicky. Thanks to everybody who listened. I hope
you have
a great week. Good night.